Hey there, I'm an animated Connor Walsh, which is kind of ironic because people say I'm pretty animated in real life. Anyway, welcome to Walsh Wednesday, my new slash old podcast. Let me explain. Back in high school in 2013, I was pressured by some friends to do an impromptu solo acoustic performance in my cafeteria. Believe it or not, people really took to it. And it turned into a monthly musical series I did through the rest of high school. Who said High School Musical wasn't realistic? By college, I turned Walsh Wednesday into a web series, focusing on interviews surrounding community events, charities, and local entertainment in the Hudson Valley and Capital Regions of New York. Walsh Wednesday spawned several spin-offs such as the Walsh Wednesday Concert Series, Walsh Wednesday Spotlights, and Walsh Wednesday The Reflective Series before its hiatus in 2021. After that, I spent the last 3 years working in radio, honing my craft, conducting unbelievable interviews, traveling to fascinating places, attending mind-blowing events, and meeting some of my personal heroes. Now, with the help of some awesome people I've met along the way, I'm bringing Walsh Wednesday back bigger and better than ever. Let's stay curious, keep an open mind, and as always, I'm glad we get to spend some time. Welcome to Walsh Wednesday. On this week's episode, we speak with Dutchess County historian Will Tatum. He and I discuss the role of a county historian, the upcoming events on the Dutchess County Historic Tavern Trail, and the importance of understanding one's history and asking the right questions. Thank you to our Walsh Wednesday All-Stars, all of those who have generously contributed to the Walsh Wednesday 2025 Fund Drive. You can see the list of names on screen or in the description of this episode. And of course, thank you to our Walsh Wednesday Warriors, Jim Robinson, John Newhall, Meg Boyce, and Jenna Hess. These individuals have pledged $100 or more to Walsh Wednesday for 2025, either through the GoFundMe or our Patreon. This episode of Walsh Wednesday is brought to you by Impact PR and Communications, MHA of Dutchess County, the Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County Incorporated, Day Rock, Lockset Rock Hair Design, A Touch of Naples Pizza and Pasta, Kip Capital Region, and Walsh Valuation. Hey there, and welcome to Walsh Wednesday. As always, I'm Connor Walsh, and we got a great episode for you guys today. So for anybody who listens or watches Walsh Wednesday and you're not in New York or in the Mid-Hudson Valley, I live in Dutchess County. I've grown up here in Dutchess County. There's a lot of great things going on in Dutchess County. And funny enough, this guy has been brought up several times already on Walsh Wednesday. If you've listened to me back at the radio station, you've heard him be brought up before. And it's like, when are we going to get this guy on? We finally have him. So with us today from the Department of History, he is Dutchess County's historian. We have Will Tatum. Will, how are you?
I'm doing great, Connor. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. And also, I don't have too many like historical clothing, but I was able to pull out my Carnwath Farm shirt for the occasion.
That is a fantastic sight. It's one of my favorite in Wappingers. And don't worry, we can help you out on the swag game. That's no problem.
Yes. Happy to hear about that. No, it's such a nice sight there. And there's so many great sights. And you know, especially when we've talked with Malane. Malane, of course, was the one who got us connected. Malane has talked to great lengths about some of the history here in this area, but also she refers to you truly being the expert. And majority of the stuff she told me, she says she learned from you. So here, let's get into this. As the Dutchess County historian, what exactly does that mean? And what is the role of the Department of History here in Dutchess County?
All right. So back in 1911, we have to turn the Wayback Machine.
I love it.
On, there was this catastrophic fire at the New York State Capitol. The whole thing burned down, and inside of there were the New York State Archives. So everything from the Dutch colonial period onward, the Dutch records survived because they were on the bottom shelves. But everything after that was just like, imagine a campfire after you've, you know, thrown a few too many marshmallows on it. That's what it looked like the day after.
Oh, geez.
So in 1918, the New York State Assembly passed this law called the Historian's Law that said every municipality in the state of New York must have an official local government-appointed historian, because we're hoping that there might be some local copies of the stuff that burned out there. But also because we lost so much in one night, we want to do our best to try to document and save what's left. And then in 1932, that was amended by then governor of New York, Franklin D. Roosevelt, to include county historians. So we fast forward a bit, 2012, we have a new administration coming in here in Dutchess County, County Executive Mark Molinaro, along with Dutchess County Clerk Brad Kendall, who'd been in office since 2007. And they decided one way to set a new tone for new era was to revive the Office of County Historian, because it had been largely vacant since 1991.
Oh, wow.
So I came on board, and yeah, it was like, hi, welcome. We had one part-time historian to help us with the Hudson Fulton celebration in 2009. But otherwise, it's been like 21 years, and we want you to do a couple of things. First, we want you to go through this amazing archive of documents going back to the 17 teens and make it more accessible for the public. And that's both like make it easy for them to find, but also do programming to tell them why it matters. The second thing they wanted was work closely with our heritage tourism folks, that is today Destination Dutchess under the leadership of Melaine Rotkamp, and make sure that everyone has the information and the stories that they need to encourage more people to come and enjoy all the history in Dutchess County, because we have 341 years of documented history here in Dutchess. We're one of the original 12 counties of New York. And then the rest was, we've got a lot of historical societies here. We've got historic sites ranging from private preservation groups all the way up to national park sites and state historic sites. We'd love for all of those to be coordinated. And it seems like the county historian should be the one to build out this community, make sure everyone's on the same page. So that in a nutshell is what I've been doing for almost 13 years now.
God bless. That seems like a heavy duty kind of job to do, considering all the different historical societies, as you said, all the different historic sites. And the fact that they said is like, yeah, we need you to go through stuff starting in the 17 teens. It's like, oh my God. So, but that's a really impressive job. And I'm sure you have a lot of great knowledge. And as you said, one thing about that knowledge is passing on that knowledge. Want to talk about this awesome event that you do, the Tavern Trail. You have 2025 dates. By the time that this airs, this will be in July. You're still going to have three more dates in August, September, and October. I think they're really cool, and especially each one is themed, I noticed. So could you go into what exactly the Tavern Trail is and what members of the community, they don't even have to be from Dutchess County, they can drive in and attend these events. What can people expect at these events?
Yeah, so these are free and open to the public. It's kind of a history happy hour type deal where, you know, it's not your standard historical society lecture where you sit in a hard metal folding chair for 45 minutes to an hour and a half listening to someone talk about super duper detailed history. This is more of a, let me tell you a really exciting story for like half an hour, 45 minutes in a place where you can relax. You can have a lovely experience of our local food and beverage industry here in Dutchess. You can meet other friends. It's really for the general public, those people who are like, I've been thinking about experimenting with history, but I don't want to get too deep in too fast. So that's our vibe. And of course, 2025 is the real beginning of the 250th commemoration cycle of the American Revolution. So back on April 19th, up at Lexington and Concord, and I was there on Lexington Green at 3:45 a.m. on April 19th, we had the 250th anniversary of the shots heard around the world, which started off the process that would create the United States of America.
Wow.
So that story covers Dutchess County as well. And all of our dates this year have been examining different sides of the story of Revolutionary Dutchess. So our first event in August is going to be at Germania of Poughkeepsie, which is certainly one of the Hudson Valley's, if not one of the state of New York's longest running German cultural clubs. It goes back to the mid 19th century with origins in the 1850s and has been in continuous operation. They're now out near the town of LaGrange. And so we'll have on Friday, August 1st, a program called Dutchess County's First Germans. That's going to explore the Palatine Germans who originally came into what is now Germantown, admittedly over the border in Columbia County between 1709 and 1712, and about the groups of Palatines who came down into Dutchess in 1712 and afterwards, and how they're such a phenomenal part of our history, both just in general terms of how Dutchess developed, but also our ongoing ties with Germany, because they were the first German immigrants. They are by no means the last. We still have this strong cultural connection with Germany. So we're going to be touching on that in that program. And then Friday, September 12th, we head back to one of our favorite sites, Lasting Joy Brewery, which is the parking lot, at least, is technically in the village of Tivoli. So we count it as Dutchess County. They are great partners. And there we're going to be talking about kind of the most important part of the revolution that no one has ever heard of, which is the invasion of Canada in 1775. So a year before the Declaration of Independence is signed, the United States has already sent an army up in to conquer Canada.
Wow.
So for me, it's like, all right, we're in the 250th cycle. Everyone from the federal government down, they're all focused on July 4th, 2026, because of July 4th, 1776. And that is a crucial part of the story, but there's so much that happened the year before that explains why we have this Declaration of Independence in the first place. And then we always like to round out our season with a really fun event that's kind of more tales than actually hardcore documented history. So our Halloween Tavern Trail on October 22nd at Foster's Coach House in Rhinebeck is
Nice.
going to be Revolutionary War ghost stories, not from Dutchess County, but these are definitely ones that have been told for a long time. And we're going to be covering issues ranging from some of the massacres in Western New York, where it's set on the sites, you'll still see ghosts at the right time of year and right time of night, all the way to did George Washington's spirit appear at the Battle of Gettysburg to rally federal troops?
Wow. Okay.
Yeah,
Yeah,
that's a
those are
story
some.
I haven't heard told a lot, but it's a story that was told during the Civil War.
Wow, okay. See, that alone just got me like intrigued enough. It's like I want to come over. Also, I love Foster's too. So, no,
Yep.
actually, all great locations and really happy to hear about that. These are great stories to be able to learn from, to be able to get a little bit of the history. And also, you know, most of these are, if I do have it right, Friday nights. It's like just a good date night or something to do with friends, or you're just looking to get out. It's a good time. The Foster's Coach one, I believe that's on a Wednesday, though. But hey, we love Wednesdays here, so we appreciate that. Fantastic, fantastic. And of course, if people want to learn more information about these events, where can they go to find more, say, a calendar of some sort, or just find links? Where can they learn more about this?
The two big, actually, I take that back. Three big places to go. The first place is Facebook, and you can either look for our Dutchess County Historic Tavern Trail page there, which will have all of this data on it, or you can look for the Dutchess History page, which is more general Dutchess County history and events. We talk about things that we're doing, things that the local historical societies are doing. And that page has a link to sign up for our online newsletter. So that's the Dutchess History Dispatch. It comes out about once a month, and it'll tell you, about a month's view ahead, all the big things that you need to know are happening. And then, of course, if you go to our departmental homepage on the county website, just type in duchessny.gov/history. There's a community calendar down. You've got to scroll towards the bottom of the page. And that'll give you these dates as well as the dates of all the other history programs, at least the ones that I know about, that are happening in Dutchess County.
Terrific. And of course, we'll make sure that we have all the links and information in the description of this episode so you can just go there, click, find out more. I think this is incredible. One thing that you said, obviously, you're focused in Dutchess County, you're working out at Dutchess County, but some of these stories do go beyond Dutchess County. You're really a historian when it comes to a lot of the things happening here throughout New York, probably beyond, but I'm sure you're getting a very broad view of things. So tell us then, is like when somebody hears historian of Dutchess County, they're like, oh, you only know Dutchess County things? You know a heck of a lot more than that. What does that network look like when you're researching things throughout the state that's connected and you have this kind of spider web you're trying to weave and connect together? How does that all work?
Well, fortunately, because we have that historian's law that requires every county and every town, village, and city to have a historian, we have a network of these local historians, and they are coordinated by a group called AFHNES, which is the Association of Public Historians of New York State. They've got a website online with a directory for anyone who may want to contact someone, say in Canajoharie, to ask a question about Mohawk Valley history. So when I find something that leads out of the county, I reach out to that. I also have this academic background. I've got this PhD in early American and British Empire history from Brown University, which means I have contacts in the academic community throughout the country and also extending over into Europe when I need it. So it's integrated on all the levels because, and granted, I am paid to say this, it doesn't mean that it's not true though. Dutchess County is like 2 degrees of separation from basically any event of national and even international significance. One of our programs on the Tavern Trail last year was Dutchess County's connection to the Spanish Civil War, which kicked off basically World War II in Europe. This was the practice where it's a war in Spain between the Republicans and the Nationalists, and the Germans back one side, the Russians back the other, kind of to test how efficient are our tanks and our planes. And wouldn't you know it, the first day of the war, a professor from Vassar happens to be right in the middle of it. And she has this amazing account published in the newspapers at the time that tells about, oh, she was visiting Alhambra, the famous palace in Spain, and the bombs started dropping, and we were stuck in our hotel. And Mr. Selfridge of Selfridge's store in London sent his pilot, who happens to be a French aristocrat, to evacuate us. And it's just like, where else in New York do you find these kinds of stories?
That is wild. It's one of those things where fact really can trump fiction with just how wild it can be sometimes. And that's fascinating. And just to be able to have that level of history, that level of knowledge of it, really just goes to show you the way that things work, the ins and outs. And as you said, the lead up to World War II, that's big. And again, going back to what we were talking about with the revolution, it's like New York being one of the 13 colonies, the fact that we were heavily involved with a lot of things that were going on at the time. Yeah, Dutchess County is going to have a lot of things happening, especially being right here on the Hudson River. There is so much to be able to work out. I'm sure my head would be swimming if I tried to comprehend some of the knowledge that you have. But before we get back into the history of Dutchess County, I want to learn a little bit more of your history. As you said, you got this PhD, and if I'm not mistaken, you're not from Dutchess County. Heck, you're not even from New York. You're from Georgia and raised in North Carolina, if I got that right. Tell us how the heck you got from those states up here to New York to become the historian.
Well, I don't know, it's an unusual tale. It's not a straight line, but I was born outside of Atlanta, Georgia, grew up in Durham, North Carolina. My mom was a professor at the University of North Carolina's undergrad medical technology program. My stepdad was a professor at Duke Med School. Clearly, history was not necessarily in that professional mix, but my mother took extraordinary measures when she saw that I was interested in this stuff to connect me with sites, with professionals. I did a whole lot of interning work at the State Museum with various state archaeological units in high school. And of course, I took the mandatory field trip that everyone in North Carolina and Virginia takes to Colonial Williamsburg when I was in fourth grade. And they're like, there's the College of William and Mary. It's the second oldest college in British North America. And so you can go there if you really like Williamsburg. So I had that in my mind the whole time. Applied to go there, spent 3 lovely years there and 1 year studying abroad in England, and came out with this desire to do British history, 18th century empire stuff. Decided I'm going to follow my parents' path because, being a professor looks pretty good. I didn't know at the time that science professors are paid very differently than history professors are. Still, it's like, all right, you get the summer off, you get research funds. It's not terrible. It's not terrible. So I applied to 8 different grad programs. Brown admitted me with a full ride.
Oh,
I was
wow.
like, this seems like a good idea. Don't go into debt for school. So I went up to Brown University, huge relocation, never had really spent any time in the North before. And then I'm in Providence, Rhode Island, which is a place I still dearly love today. Take every opportunity to get back over there. And had several beautiful years at Brown, including a year abroad doing dissertation research, because my dissertation was on the 18th century British Army. So
Okay.
that helps tie in with the revolution. I was also involved from undergraduate experience onwards with doing costumed living history, what some people call reenacting at historic sites
Heck
up and down
yeah.
the Eastern Seaboard. So, because of this, I applied for a fellowship at a little place called the David Library of the American Revolution, which unfortunately does not exist in its previous form today. But in 2010, I was hired on as their resident historian. I was there from 2010 to 2012, and just happened to meet through networking the woman who is now the Orange County historian, Johanna Poor, and she said, hey, have you heard that the Dutchess County is looking for a county historian? And my first question was, Dutchess County. I've read about this place. What do you know about it? And she was like, well, I live in Orange County, but I hear it's a really wonderful spot. And you're a public historian. I'm like, yes, that's true. I've done a lot of frontline stuff with the public, as well as all the academic stuff. Checked out the position, drove around the county, thought this is a really beautiful place. It's got deep history. It would be a great place to work because I like the early stuff. It's kind of difficult to get into for other people. So there's growth opportunities here. Threw my hat into the ring. And the major turning point in my life is when Brad Kendall and Mark Molinaro said, this is the guy we want. And the county legislature was kind enough to confirm me. And in October of 2012, I find myself here in Dutchess County, where I've been ever since, happily working away. And I do all 400 years. No, sorry, 341 years. Sometimes it feels like 400. Of Dutchess County history from when we were established as lines on a map in November of 1683. I like to say up till 1967 when the current Dutchess County Charter was passed, but in reality, I'm responsible up to like 5 minutes ago. So
I was
it's a
going to
lot of
say,
fun stuff.
I'm sure that's a lot of fun stuff. Oh my God. What an interesting journey of how you're able to navigate through all this. But hey, isn't that what we were just saying with history being wilder than fiction sometimes? It's like you can't make this up. And pause. We're going to take a quick break from our interviews to hear from our sponsors. First up, we got our friend Andrew O'Grady from MHA of Dutchess County.
Adversity and stress. How do you cope? I'm dealing with a voice issue right now, my own adversity and stress. So let's use AI Andy for the rest of this message. Take it away, AI Andy.
This is Andrew O'Grady, CEO at MHA of Dutchess County. We all move on a scale of mental wellness. It can shift minute by minute, hour by hour, based on what we face. What happens when it piles on? How do you cope? Do you turn to the bottle or vape? Do you medicate with pills not prescribed for that purpose? Do you become short-tempered and argue with others? Are you quick to road rage? These are self-defeating and negative reactions, and they're unhealthy and can lead to self-inflicted further stress. There's no shame in seeking to improve you by engaging in self-care with a therapist. If you do not know where to start, talk to your primary care physician. You can always contact Mental Health America of Dutchess County at 845-473-2500, and if we don't have a specific program to help you, we will help guide you to one.
Thanks, AI Andy. You sound pretty good.
A message from the College and Career Supply Registry from KIPP Capital Region. Help them provide essential supplies to their graduating seniors and make a positive impact on the beginning of their journey after KIPP. You can scan the QR codes on screen or visit the links in the description of this episode. Up next, we have our friend Philomena Finelli from Impact PR and Communications.
Thanks, Connor. I'm Philomena Finelli, CEO of Impact PR and Communications and a media maven, which is a fancy way of saying that my team and I help companies get in the news, transform leaders into thought leaders, and cut through the clutter with messaging that matters. And we do it all with a smile. Our agency was named the Woman-Owned Small Business of the Year for 2024 by the Metro New York District Office of the U.S. Small Business Administration, and we received the Gold Stevie Award for Women-Run Workplace of the Year, which is an international recognition. But it's not about the awards, it's about the personal interactions. We at Impact PR and Communications pride ourselves on crafting meaningful, results-driven public relations campaigns that are tailored to meet and exceed our clients' goals. If you want to learn more and talk to my team and I, visit prwithimpact.com and let us know that you found out about us from Walsh Wednesday.
Thanks for listening, guys. It's time to get back to the show and play. This episode of Walsh Wednesday is brought to you by Impact PR and Communications, MHA of Dutchess County, the Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County Incorporated, Day Rock, Lockset Rock Hair Design, A Touch of Naples Pizza and Pasta, KIPP Capital Region, and Walsh Valuation. And speaking of some fun stuff, being your first time on here, I kind of did this with Joey Cavicini, when I had him on the radio station. I kind of like threw a bunch of questions at him. I was like, what are your favorite like things that you learned working out of Wappingers and everything? So I'm just curious with you then, I'm sure you got a lot of interesting facts up in your head, and I would love to hear some of those stories. So let's start off with, what's one of the weirdest facts that you have learned about Dutchess County?
All right. So one of the things that I love to point out, and this is why I do history, Connor, is because the truth, oh my God, is so much stranger than fiction. And our local historians really helped me with all of this. Joey has been just phenomenal for Wappingers. He's really the bedrock down there. And I always know that if I come up with something that I don't understand, he's a phone call away to clue me in. But one of the things I've learned, and I don't like, it's not 100%, but I know of two cases, which normally when there are two, that means there's one in every town. There's some form of grisly unsolved murder
Oh,
everywhere
geez.
in Dutchess County. So the first one, probably the most famous one right now, is the Germain family murders, which occurred on Thanksgiving of, I want to say 1934. I could be mistaken on that, but entire family slain with a kitchen knife.
Oh, geez. Yeah, I've heard of that actually.
It's unsolved till this day, but as if that wasn't strange enough, the descendant of the then Dutchess County Sheriff, the descendant's name is Vincent Cookingham, came in 2017 and said, I've been a forensic detective for like 35 years with the New York Police Department. I want to look at these files and see if, with the benefit of modern science, we can maybe figure out what they couldn't, because this is like one of the first cases where crime scene photos were introduced into court as
Oh,
evidence.
really?
And yeah, they were trying to do forensics on this. They had some stuff where they were like, let's lift fingerprints, but it got contaminated because they didn't have all the procedures we do today. But with assistance from our county clerk and from our excellent retired judge, Al Rosenblatt, who's been a leader in the statewide history community for many years, he was able to see the coroner's inquests. He's got a book out on it now if people want to look for Vincent Cookingham or the German, Germond murders on Amazon. It's like he goes through all of the details and he's got a firm idea of who he thinks did it. And it's
Oh,
just
wow.
like, wow, we're supposed to be sleepy little Dutchess County. And then up in Red Hook, we've got the unsolved murder of Frank Teal, who was a major surveyor. Like basically, if you own land in Dutchess, or sorry, in Red Hook and Rhinebeck, Frank Teal probably surveyed it. He was murdered in his home one night in the 1950s, and they could never figure out who did it. But it was another like gruesome scene. And it's just like there seemed to be an example for each of the towns, I'm sure, if you dig deep enough. And it's just like, wow, okay, I knew about a revolutionary history, I knew about FDR, knew about all this other stuff. I never thought that Dutchess County would be a land for murder mysteries as well.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. I've heard of the Germain murders, but yeah, no, I wasn't familiar with that Red Hook one. That's fascinating. You mentioned FDR there. As you said, growing up, Gettysburg was like that crucial fourth grade field trip, going to the FDR house for many of the schools around here, not even Dutchess County, but a lot of the neighboring counties. That's like one of the quintessential field trips as well. So since we're talking about the former president and the fact that it's right here in Hyde Park, do you have an interesting fact about the FDR, his family, the Roosevelts in general, that the general public might not know?
Yeah, I think the most interesting fact, and again, I'm a little biased here, FDR was super interested in local history, so much so that he was a founding member not only of the Dutchess County Historical Society, he was a founding member of its predecessor organization, the Dutchess Society down in Manhattan.
Oh,
So
wow.
this is a guy who, from an early age, just loves county history. Most people might be aware that when the NRA, the National Recovery Act, National Recovery Agency comes through and they're rebuilding things like post offices, all the ones here that they did in Dutchess County are based off colonial architecture. But that's an interest that for FDR goes back to his childhood. And even today, some of the most important documents on colonial and early Republic Dutchess County history are preserved at the FDR Library because he personally interceded on this stuff, and not just when he was president. When he first made it big time in Washington, D.C., when he was Assistant Secretary of the Navy during the First World War, he reached out to friends he made in the British Admiralty and said, hey, can you send us copies of all of the records in the ship's log from the 1777 campaign up the Hudson Valley, which most people have never heard of, but FDR was on top of that in like 1918 and made sure that we had all of the data we needed. And this is long before he had any idea that he would become one of our most outstanding presidents.
Wow, that really is fascinating. And then also what you're saying about various architecture as well. If I'm not mistaken, weren't a good number of like the schools and offices that you can find here in New York built under his administration? Like, I'm pretty sure, especially around me in Poughkeepsie, a number of the schools, I think Violet Avenue was one of them. You also have the post office there in Poughkeepsie. A lot of the major infrastructures that we have today were due to his administration. Am I right in saying that, or is my history mixed up?
Well, there's certainly a lot of it that is due to the Roosevelt administration because, of course, his way of combating the Great Depression were massive works projects, the kinds of which we haven't seen really since Eisenhower decided that we needed an interstate system similar to what he saw firsthand in Germany. Urban renewal has changed a lot of that landscape. Unfortunately, some of the work that FDR's government did in terms of infrastructure was overridden, let's say, by urban renewal. So when you look at the especially the urban, but also a lot of the rural and like town landscapes throughout New York, not just Dutchess County, you'll see those twin marks on them of FDR on the one hand and of urban renewal of the 1960s, sometimes lasting all the way up until the 1990s on the other. So absolutely, we got, I think it's safe to say, much more attention both in New York and in Dutchess County in particular from those Recovery Act programs in the 1930s than most of the rest of the nation did.
Probably a little biases there, but we'll take it. We'll take it for everything that we're working on. I think that's great. So then talking about just different facts and different stories, what's say you're at a party somewhere meeting somebody for the first time and they're like, "Oh, you're a historian. Tell me something. What's like one of your favorite stories to tell at a party? Like, what's your bar trick or your bar fact that you like to throw out there? Do you have one?"
I have a couple. It always depends. I like to read the audience. That's one of the keys of being a public historian is know your
Fair.
audience and meet them where they are. One of the ones I like to trot out for an audience like this one, where I'm not too sure, who's going to be listening in, is Poughkeepsie's the birthplace of the Bill of Rights.
Really?
In 1788, the convention to ratify the U.S. Constitution. So New York's discussion about are we going to join this new United States? Because after independence, the country had operated under the Articles of Confederation, very loose government, no strong federal center. The states could kind of do what they wanted, including putting tariffs on goods coming in from other states. So, like New York could say, we don't like our competition with New Jersey, so we're going to put a tariff on everything that comes in from New Jersey. Like Ben Franklin thought that was a pretty bad idea. So they write the Constitution down in Philadelphia. They have to send it out to the states for ratification. And when the convention meets right next door to where I am, I'm at 22 Market Street. Next door to us is the county courthouse. And while that county courthouse is from 1902, it sits on the same site that the previous four county courthouses have occupied since the 1720s. So right next door, you had Alexander Hamilton facing off with New York Governor George Clinton, Federalists versus Anti-Federalists. The Federalists are like, hey, if we're going to have a real country, if we're going to be able to protect our trade, protect our borders, act as an equal with the great nations of Europe and the rest of the planet, oh, we need a strong federal government. We can't have these states like enacting tariffs against each other and having their own currencies. Like, imagine having to have an exchange rate between New York and North Carolina. It's just crazy. We need this. On the other hand, George Clinton and anti-federalists are saying we didn't just fight one war to escape from an empire to be forced to join another empire. We fought this war for New York's independence, not so that we could then have basically an elected king, which is their argument for what the president would be. We don't like it. So between June and July, for 6 weeks, these guys and their parties are debating back and forth next door. And finally, Melanchthon Smith, named after that guy from the Lutheran Reformation over in Germany, steps out and says, all right, we're super close here. And by the way, Massachusetts has ratified the Constitution. So now it is going into effect. So if we don't ratify, we're going to have a problem because, on the one hand, New York City has said it will secede from New York in order to join the United States itself. And also, the new United States isn't going to permit itself to be split geographically by the breakaway state of New York. Like Vermont, sure, maybe they'll break away, but New York, no. So, how about this? Anti-federalists are concerned that this constitution puts all of the power in a central government, and the people's voice just is really not going to be heard in the way that we want it to be. How about we attach a document with a list of individual rights that the federal government can never trample on? So it'll be like freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom from illegal search and seizure, all the things that you can find in the Declaration of Independence. So we're preserving all of the stuff we fought for. But at the same time, we know we're going to have to join this country. Mm-hmm. And the anti-federalists are like, okay, you know, I guess we can get behind that. We'll have a conditional ratification that some list of enumerated rights is passed. And that, at least we here in New York argue, is the birth of the Bill of Rights, which, of course, is the centerpiece for individual liberty here in America and throughout the planet, because most of the other democratic republics on Earth copy the United States. So that is one of my cocktail stories.
That's incredible. Now, why isn't that fact mentioned in Hamilton, the musical? Why isn't that in there?
I don't know. It would have been beautiful to have a shout out to Poughkeepsie, because can you imagine the heritage tourism opportunities here? I know Mulane can.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I've watched Hamilton a couple times. I've listened to the soundtrack. I don't believe Poughkeepsie is ever specifically mentioned. What a shame.
It's not.
Lin-Manuel, what are you doing? Just imagine if there was a Poughkeepsie reference and then like there's a whole crowd from Poughkeepsie just like cheer and uproar at like one of the shows. This is way too off topic. Well, not too off topic. Have you ever seen, I'm assuming you've seen the Night at the Museum films?
I've not, actually.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
So there's actually this great scene. I remember seeing this in theaters. And Ben Stiller is talking to Robin Williams. Robin Williams is playing Teddy Roosevelt. And he's like, and Ben Stiller's like, "You're Teddy Roosevelt. You've done this. You've done that. Come on, I need you." And it was like, "Son, I'm not the real Teddy Roosevelt. I'm just a wax figurine made in a factory in Poughkeepsie." And as soon as he said Poughkeepsie, I'm at Regal Cinemas in Poughkeepsie. Everybody just freaks out cheering. Nobody was expecting it. It was just like one of those moments. Imagine that moment if it was in Hamilton too. Damn.
Oh God.
That would be... Chef's kiss. That would be fantastic. Missed opportunity with Hamilton, but thank you, Night at the Museum, for giving Poughkeepsie the shout out. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Highly recommend the franchise. They're good movies. They are a lot of fun. But with all that being said, I think I've made you dance around with all the different favorite fact questions there for a while. But I do want to talk a little more seriously now. You know, in a very heated, very heated political landscape that we have, very heated world landscape that we have. There's a number of people who are saying that we are forgetting some of the lessons that we learned in history. Other people are taking history and misconstruing it in various ways. I'm not trying to pick one side versus another here, but as a historian reaching out to the general public, why do you think it's important to be educated on our history?
For me, the core issue is that the past and history are two very different things. This is something that they pound into your head in grad school. They don't let you leave until you can explain it. And it took me a long time to fully master that part. But they're two different things. So the past is real. It happened. It is every moment of our lives before right now, and the moments of everyone else's life who's ever lived on planet Earth. Real people, real things, real events, real heartbreak, everything we experience today has more or less been experienced before. But our records aren't complete. It's like if we weren't recording this podcast episode today, if we were just taking notes on what we talked about, how much information would we be missing? And then you think about how much information do we actually have from the Poughkeepsie ratification debates of 1788? It's like what they felt was worth writing down. So the past is fragmentary. History is the art, the form of analysis by which we look back at the past. We sift through those fragments. We're trying to put together, as I like to say, the 2,000-piece jigsaw puzzle with like four pieces, never seen the box art. So the whole purpose of history, this idea that history doesn't change, well, the past does not change. Sometimes we gain more information on it because we discover documents or other forms of objects or information that we didn't have before. That is not a change in the past, it's a change in our access to the past. History is this methodology, this approach by which we take those fragments and we try to tell a story about the past that is meaningful to us in the present. And there are responsible ways to do that, which require a whole lot of time and a whole lot of training, because contrary to popular belief, it's really hard to just walk in off the street, take a primary source from like 1738 and understand what the writer really means, any more than it's really easy to walk in off the street today and take a newspaper from Great Britain and try to explain how the Tories and whatnot are doing their thing. There's this idea that the past is a foreign country, the past is the world we have lost. And we go through grad school as professional historians to learn a whole bunch of different methods to make sense of this stuff in a way that both honors the mindset of those people X amount of years ago, but also translates that into terms that modern people can understand. So history is really about serving modern interests, answering questions that modern people have, and giving us an idea of maybe, you know, everyone wants to know, whether it's the Ouija board, the crystal ball, the tarot cards, they want to know what's right around the corner. Human beings do not like uncertainty. Well, I can't summon spirits from the past, but I can look at broad patterns in the past and say, well, under these conditions before, these sorts of things have happened. I don't take that necessarily as like, and that's what's going to happen now, but more as a, because I'm on the side of the profession that is all about asking questions. We're not here really to give answers. We do give answers when people ask to the best of our abilities, but the real goal is to ask better questions. So I like to look at the past not as a place to answer like, what should we do next to resolve our issues? More I look at the past as, what does the past tell us about what we might be forgetting to ask now or to think about? Or things like, well, here in America right now, we are very divided. Everyone agrees on that. It's one of the few things. This is nothing new. In fact, the entire framework of our culture and our politics is based around disagreement. You have to have disagreement to make the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, our corpus of law work. The whole idea of America that sets it apart from basically every other planet, or every other planet, yes, and every other country on the planet, is that we turned our back on the European model. That European model was one people, one nation. You know, it might be a country, it might be a kingdom, it might be a bishopric, but basically everyone living in England is English. There may be 300 different varieties of English because the guys in Devon can't understand the guys in Yorkshire, but they are all English. Same for France, same for Spain, et cetera, et cetera. Here in America, from the beginning of the United States, at least, it's like we are going to be a country of heterogeneous groups. You know, we welcome everyone, more or less, with some, you know, technical stipulations. And we're going to have to find a way to deal with that. And that's what the Constitution is all about, is it's a way to manage a disagreement, which is inevitable, in a way that makes us stronger rather than weaker, which is why we've only had one civil war. That's kind of like a huge record when you look at the rest of the planet, both countries that are thousands of years older than us and countries that are like hundreds of years younger than us. It's all baked into the equation. And looking back at the past, looking at all of the crises that we have navigated, for me says the real question we should be asking right now is not how bad is it or how bad is it going to be, but is this not just part of what happens here in America? We've made it through almost 250 years of this, of things that are much worse than this. And everyone agreed at the time they were much worse than this. Like, there's a lot of hope to be found both in the study of the past and in the tools of history.
Wow. That was beautifully, beautifully said. And I hope a lot of people listen to that and really take something out of it. As you said, history is an art form, and to be able to work through it is something incredible. And then, as you said about handling that art form responsibly, there was a term that I learned through studying journalism and communications. You may change the story, but you can't change the truth. You become a prisoner of your own lies. And I think that's very, very interesting, and especially the way that we are in this informational age, this technological age, but how much of it, you know, is like, where's it all coming from? It's very hard to be able to take everything at face value. So based off everything that you just said there, I think that sums it up so well, and something that I believe in my life: ask questions. Keep asking questions. Be curious, not judgmental. Really just keep asking questions. And I think that's great. Will, thank you so much for being here on this episode of Walsh Wednesday. I really appreciate your time. I appreciate your knowledge. I hope we can get you back on here again and talk about more stories. I think it would be really great for, well, I know I would enjoy it, but I think a number of other people would enjoy it as well. Before we completely wrap up, is there any last little nugget that you want to share with the Walsh Wednesday listening audience?
Make sure to check out the Destination Duchess website. They are doing a fantastic job of promoting all of the opportunities to see and experience local history here in Dutchess County.
Absolutely. Malayan and her team does such a great job with that. And of course, she shouts you out all the time. So really happy to finally actually connect with you, Will. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
I'm Connor.
I'm Will.
And as always, we're glad we get to
spend some time.
And that's a wrap on this week's episode. Much love to our sponsors this week: Impact PR and Communications, MHA of Dutchess County, Locks That Rock Hair Design, A Touch of Naples Pizza and Pasta, the Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County, Kip Capital Region, Walsh Valuation, and Day Rock. Thank you to our Walsh Wednesday All-Stars, all of those who have generously contributed to the Walsh Wednesday 2025 Fund Drive. You can see the list of names on screen or in the description of this episode. And of course, thank you to our Walsh Wednesday Warriors, Jim Robinson, John Newhall, Meg Boyce, and Jenna Hess. These individuals have pledged $100 or more to Walsh Wednesday for 2025, either through the GoFundMe or our Patreon. You can support this channel by becoming a Patreon member with memberships as low as $5 a month. With that, you can get behind-the-scenes content, your name featured in the credits of each episode, and access to the Spend Some Time chat. You can find that and more by scanning the QR code on your screen or by going to the links in the description. As always, I'm Connor Walsh, and I'm glad we get to spend some time.